Hey everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of Pod Stallions. I am, the as always, Brian, and right next to me, just a phone call away, is Jason.
Hello everyone, welcome.
And of course it's October, and October means horror. Yes, spooky. My house is already done up. I am married to a kindred spirit. We've got the blow molds going on and all the latest things from Michaels. But I thought this was the perfect episode to discuss a favorite of mine, a favorite of yours, and, of course, a staple, I think, of our childhood, and that is Vincent Price. We've mentioned Vincent Price many a time, but we've never actually done a sole Vincent Price episode. Is that correct?
It's funny, because when you mentioned it, when you threw it out as an idea, my first reaction was, I thought we did Vincent
Price. Pretty sure we have done him.
Just because he seems to have come up in so many episodes in different ways.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked about him.
Well, you know, that's the first thing I want to say about the man is he's a bit like Roddy McDowall, who we did an episode on, in that he didn't seem to ever slum. He would do television. He would do, you know, radio. He would do music. He would do cartoons. Like, he did not ever, and of course he did major motion pictures, but he did not ever seem to delineate between the two. He would just do wherever the work brought him. And so he was everywhere when we were kids.
Yeah, and he was, it's funny because they were very dear friends as well. They did a stage production of something at some point together, which was it. Cause, you know, and the other thing I'd say about him too, along the same lines, is he could do, I mean, he was versatile, even though I understand it was Vincent Price and there's no getting around that it's Vincent Price. He could do, you know, satire, you know, comedy horror, regular horror. He goes all the way to very, dark, horror, like Witchfinder General and things like that. And then, you know, by the time we get to, you know, us growing up, it's the Muppet Show and variety specials.
Oh my stars,
like that.
Yeah.
Like, he just sort of, yeah, he was everywhere. He just was a perennial. I mean, you know, we'll get into all that, but that's, I totally agree with you that he and McDowell are sort of, it would make sense they would be kindred spirits.
Yeah.
You know, the type of stuff that they did. And they didn't, I think they thought they were above certain things, but they like to work. They like to constantly work.
And Karloff was like that too. He was never beneath work. So Vincent Price was actually born in 1911. I didn't know that. And the first film I've ever seen him in, he's done earlier films, but I think in horror genre, the first film he ever did was opposite Boris Karloff in Tower of London, 1939, which I had to actually, like, sit on my phone and Google, like, is Vincent Price in this? Because he's so young. Like, he's 28 years old doing this film. That I didn't know it was him. And then, of course, right after that for Universal, he did The Invisible Man Returns, which I don't think I've actually ever seen. But most people would know him in the Universal series for Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. He played the Invisible Man at the very end in the cameo when they get
in the
boat.
That's right. He's got, like, a cameo. Yeah. Yeah. I think mine, I was trying to think about this. I could be wrong about this because, you know, we grew up at a time when there would be re-releases of movies. Like, I remember being, I don't know, 11 or 12 or so, and my dad taking me and my older brother, it might have been like, I don't know, maybe I was 10, I don't know, took us to see Dial M for Murder.
The 3D version, I've seen that,
in 3D. And I think it might have been the first 3D thing I'd seen in a theater, which, of course, prepped me for Metal Storm, the Destruction of Jared Sin.
Were we ever prepped for Metal Storm, Destruction of Jared Sin? Were we ever completely ready for that?
No. No. And at some point, we're going to have to talk about Space Hunter, because I found it on, like, Hulu or Amazon or something. And, man, I got...
Let's record a track.
I got 20 minutes.
Let's do a commentary track for that. We should do that.
For Space Hunter? We should. But it's funny how I hadn't seen it in all those years, and it started to look familiar. Like, I started to recognize things in it that were sort of seared into my brain from back then. But so I think it was a situation like that, and he took us to House of Wax on the big screen. So put it this way, you know, I guarantee before then I would have been familiar with his face and his voice, but not entirely sure who he was.
Really?
You know, just that he was this. Well, I mean, I don't think at 8 or 9, 8 years old, I was absolutely caught. I mean, I'd see him in pages of Famous Monsters and things like that, but I don't know how much of the stuff I'd seen, because you couldn't rent it and you had to wait for it to show up on TV and stuff. And so House of Wax scared the crap out of me.
It's pretty scary. I saw that like at 12 and remember thinking,
disturbing.
This is disturbing. Now, for me, now I know I grew up outside of Hamilton, Ontario, where they always played the hilarious House of Frightenstein, which Vincent Price famously taped like every segment for 80 episodes in one day. So he was the opening and closing of that show. So he was the face of horror for me. Even when, you know, like, I mean, sure. Saturday morning, that show I think was released in 1970 or 1971, but because of what is called CanCon laws, they released that for years. So I saw Hilarious House of Frightenstein for, you know, my entire childhood. So he became the face of it from that. And of course, I know I'm jumping forward in his career, but stuff like the Brady Bunch, you know, where he appeared as the guy, I think he captures the Brady kids. I can't quite remember. But he was such a versatile guy who didn't turn things down that I remember that.
Like, yeah, I probably would have seen him on Batman.
Oh, Egghead. Yeah,
Before I fully understood, you know, his legend. You know, I'm sure I saw him on that. But it's funny because you're jumping ahead, and I was going to wait and save this, but I'll jump in now. Right, exactly. We've never jumped around before. He did a TV special in 1974 called The Horror Hall of Fame.
I remember that.
Which is one of those TV specials that has to be seen because, you know, Frank Gorshin and John Astin shows up, and it's canned laughter and horrible jokes and horrible scripting. But I found it a year ago maybe, and I remember looking, because we didn't talk about this, I don't think, before, because we hadn't talked about Frightenstein in a long time, but there's an Igor character in the show, and it's Billy Vent is in that special. Yeah, it's Billy Van, and it made sense to me because I was like, Brian just was telling me that Vincent Price was in all these, and he must have called him and said, "Hey, I'm doing this special in L.A. Why don't you come and be on it or whatever?" And he's in it as this comedy wacky Igor type guy. And what's funny about the special is, you know, it's this mix of, you know, that early '70s, like everyone's into classic horror and then new stuff, and so they mention The Exorcist and, you know, and they try to keep it sort of up to, like, they even have a bit where he's talking to John Astin about monster merchandise, and they show the Godzilla model kit and, you know, Famous Monsters magazine and stuff like that. But he does two things that I'll never forget in this thing. When he says Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, he says Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, and he does it once, and then he did it again. And then when Candy Clark was on in the new hit film American, I think he says graffiti or something. He doesn't say.
Can I just interject because I'll never get this out. My wife and I were going to a con once in New Jersey, and we were trying to figure out where it was. And Candy, like, this woman pulled up next to me and said, "Do you know where the convention is?" And I talked to her and said, "I think it's down this road." And then I'm like, "That was Candy Clark." It was like 1997. I gave her directions.
and of American graffiti fame, and man who feels
the
earth.
Oh, man who feels the earth.
David Bowie. Yes, David Bowie. So I remember him saying Dr. Jekyll in this thing, but it's a trip because it's so of its time. But your boy Billy Van is in this TV special.
I have to seek that out.
I think it's 74 or 75.
I didn't know
you have
that.
To find that. Yeah.
Billy Van, by the way, has a museum in Hamilton now, where Frightenstein was taped. I went to go there. I wanted to really buy a T-shirt, and it was not open when I went.
Can you order stuff? I figured you'd be decked out in everything.
Well, I'm actually wearing a Frightenstein T-shirt right now. I know you can't see it.
See?
I did not.
Knew it. So you knew him from. So you grew up with him.
He was on TV every Saturday morning.
That would have been your first. So that would really have been your first exposure.
Oh, absolutely,
was,
and it cemented him as the king of horror. Yeah. I didn't know this, but just you dig this. He was Simon Templar on the radio in the 40s. Yeah, okay,
that's right.
You did know that.
That's right, and. Well, I knew that only because the big Saint guy, yeah. Saints and Shadow and all that, and George Sanders,
no relation to Colonel,
played the Saint in the movies, and they always were kind of similar to me, Vincent Price and George Sanders, like these silky smooth voices, and George Sanders was the Shere Khan the Tiger in Jungle Book, and he was in All About Eve.
Yeah, the Saint always struck me as a little bit of a gentleman, so yeah, that kind of works.
Yes.
Now I remember as a kid. My local TV station, the Global TV, did a thing with The Mad Magician, which is a 1954 3D picture, probably a follow-up to House of Wax, with Price. And I remember that very, very, very vividly. And, of course, Magic Shadows, when I was a kid, played The Fly, which I'm sure you remember as a kid as well.
Oh, yes. Well, we've talked about this. There was a thing on Friday night late, I think, or Saturday night. It was called Horror Incorporated.
Wow.
And they would show a horror picture on Friday night, but the camera would go down this hallway of these, creepy, like, sculpted heads or life masks or things like that, and then tonight, And so I saw The Fly on there, and I remember The Abominable Dr. Clyde.
Yeah.
Because it was one of those moments where I had seen the face in
of course,
Famous
yeah.
Monsters, the skull face. And then to see it suddenly one night, and this is, I'm like, 10, 11 years old. Like, this is still pretty scary stuff late at night to watch. Because that's kind of, this movie, it's wacky, but it's a little disturbing.
I think it's great.
That face. Oh yeah, no, it's great. Well, he did a lot of that. He did a lot of that, Theater of Blood, and there was a lot of stuff that he was very tongue in cheek. What I love about it, again, back to like when we first sort of knew who he was, I don't know which came first for me, but I even if I had seen him first, I was aware enough, like in TV specials and things, it was apparent enough to me in seeing him in the things that I did that he had something to do with horror movies. Because it was always played up in whatever sketch it was, and whatever he did, it was always spooky. And I your brain, even as a kid, puts it together and goes, oh, I bet this guy is like there's horror movies and stuff, And then you start to see stuff kind of pop up. And then, the next week he'd be on, Carol Burnett doing something as a vampire or something. And you understood that this guy was synonymous with, with horror, which is kind of fascinating too, because unless I get this wrong, his first at a very young age too. I think he hit Broadway, and I forget what the production was, but he was like second or third lead in this show. But he was only, like 30 or in his early 30s or something. He wasn't really well known in movies at all. And then suddenly this Broadway thing was huge. It was this major production, and then the movie stuff started to happen, and he was in things like
Laura, with Gene Tierney,
Dana Andrews and Gene Tierney and stuff like that. And I think the horror thing, was House of Wax like the first kind of was that the first kind of foray into full-on horror?
Tower and that kind of opened the doors? Tower of London was the first thing he did that was horror.
But was he... He wasn't prominent in that,
right?
No,
he was kind
of
a supporting character. I think House of Wax, you're right. I think that would be the first time he played, like, the monster in the film. And
right.
I honestly think... And this is just a theory, and others can prove me wrong, but... What really happened for him was he was still relatively young, a man in his, you know, late 40s, early 50s, when that second generation, like that whole late 50s, early 60s monster movie mania happened, you know, model kits and that sort of thing.
Yeah, the monster
and,
kid.
You know, like, Lugosi was dead, Chaney died in the early 1970s, and of course, Karloff died in the late 1960s, and Karloff, of course, never stopped working. But he kind of became the face of it. Like, it was like he became the elder statesman. Like, in the way that Tom Baker is like the elder statesman for Doctor Who now.
Yeah.
Vincent Price kind of just kind of moved into that, you know, because he'd had a terrific category of films. I mean, he worked for William Castle. And, you know, he got on that AIP kick right in the 1960s. So he kind of just became horror, so to speak.
Yeah, and I think it had to do with he had an approach to it. When you'd see him on talk shows and, you know, even back on game shows in the, you know, early 60s or late 50s or whatever it was, the self-deprecating thing that had that was
brilliant.
You know, the scariest man alive, and he's the monster in all these movies, and then he would just, you know, take the piss all the time, and that made him very, very endearing. And then it was, you know, whatever he'd do, people would go and see. And yeah, I think he became the next generation of that. You know, he's the generation under those guys, sort of. But even though he broke at a fairly, I don't know, like you said, mid-30s of House of Wax?
He was probably... I think House of Wax, he was 40 years old.
Years old. There you go. Yeah. There you go.
Which gives me a lot of hope. I'm 48 now, and...
When did he do... you know what he also did that you'll appreciate is the Richard Matheson...
Right.
Man on Earth.
Yeah,
which became, what was it made into? What was the remake?
No, it was The Omega Man, but it was actually...
Yeah.
The book was called I Am Legend. The first adaptation was Vincent Price. You're absolutely right.
Right. It was called Last Man on Earth,
and
right?
I've always thought, and this is no offense to him, but he was totally wrong for the part. But the film itself is a much more straightforward adaptation of I Am Legend than The Omega Man. The Omega Man takes it into a new dimension. I've always said to friends and you know, anyone who I will bore with, I wish that there was that film with Charlton Heston in it. Because I actually really, you know, if you're going to go with classic actors, I feel Heston is a good Neville because he's a good anti-hero as well as a hero. I love Vincent.
But why do you...
I love Vincent Price, but he's not... Neville, he just doesn't have it. I don't know how to explain.
Well, again, do you think that's because we are so familiar with other things that he's done, and so when he shows up in a part like that it's kind of...
That's a really good question.
We feel like
you know how, like, certain,
you know,
actors, like, and I said this to a coworker the other day, I can't believe that Leonardo DiCaprio can kick anyone's ass. I could beat the crap out of Leonardo DiCaprio with one arm behind my back down the road. Doesn't mean I don't like him as an actor, but I just can't, like, I can't stand up playing a tough guy. Tom Cruise pulls me out of movies. I think that's it. I find that Vincent Price, as much as I do love his films, there's too much empathy to play Robert Neville. I don't know how to explain it other than that.
Here's part of the problem. Part of the problem, too, is that, you know, we've talked about this before in horror, that you've got these icons that all have very, very, very distinctive voices. Peter Lorre, Vincent Price, Boris Karloff, you know, Lugosi.
Yeah, but it wasn't to
and,
the point of parody.
You know, Christ, even
like,
when
I know what you're saying.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. But it's like when you hear Vincent Price talk, it tends to sound a little sinister. It tends to sound a little, you know, it's a one off, and I think that it's jarring hearing him do other stuff sometimes. Like even in his early stuff, he just seemed kind of, you know, kind of evil or just kind of
it just there's something,
I don't know. I get what you're saying about the adaptation.
There's just
yeah.
something that doesn't like a you know, and I haven't watched it in years. It, even though it's got to be the most. It's got to be the most easily found adaptation of the film ever. It's on every compilation disc. But
what the Last Man on Earth?
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I remember buying it because I was really into the book in my early college years. And somebody, I bought it at the first Fangoria show I went to in like 1990. And being like, this is really good. Like it. It note there's some note for note stuff from the book. It's just Vincent Price isn't who I pictured. You know, you read a book and you picture somebody in the book. He's not who I picture as Robert Neville. It just doesn't work. I had no problem with Heston. I had zero problem with Will Smith. But it, you know.
Yeah, I get what you. I mean, I get it. He's more of a dandy.
He's a little too. Yeah, he's a man's man. You know, Robert Neville's like a Ron Swanson. You know, if you get that reference, he's a little bit
a Doc Savage.
Yeah, he's a can build a deck. You know, and
Price is a little. He's kind of a dandy.
Yeah,
he's always been sort of a dandy. You know, and he's.
I remember there's a part in that film where he has a freak out and he's like, oh, I lost my temper. And it's like, no, that's wrong. And that's also just my attachment to that. Like, that is my favorite piece of fiction ever, other than The Count of Monte Cristo.
He collected, I think he collected art. From the time he was a child,
yeah.
I think he bought something. I don't know who it was, but you know, I remember he was like a kid or something and saved up.
I think one of the reasons that I'm a painter is because of Vincent Price. He's a Renaissance man. He was a cook.
Renaissance.
I've been holding off on saying this, but my wife and I last Halloween. We took a Vincent Price recipe for Chinese chicken. We got it out of like, you know, some Seagram's ad or something. And it was horrible.
Well, remember, no one had taste.
Well, yeah,
buds
no,
back.
it was just.
I think we only had
just,
three taste buds.
It was basically chicken and red sauce. And it was like, this is awesome.
But the idea was if you drank enough, if it was the 70s and you drank enough, you wouldn't notice.
I think that we were missing the Seagram's part of that. But
the secret ingredient.
Being completely bombed.
Well, he had it. I think he didn't he put out a. I thought he and his wife put out
a
cookbook or
they
something.
Did.
Was that?
No, he was married a few times, but I think the wife that most of us, you know, 70s kids remember is the Australian actress Coral Brown, who he married. He got intrigued with on the set of the film Theater.
He had an affair with her.
Yes. And he was, I think he was a good Catholic, as I recall. And it was a bit of a problem getting married to her. Or she was a good Catholic. I can't remember the two. But
well, it's funny because, and we you know, this is neither here nor there, but I find it kind of fascinating. It goes along with the Renaissance thing that you're talking about. I mean, according to his daughter, who is out, she said not long ago that he was bisexual. But also that what was the woman's name, the actress?
Coral Brown.
Yes, and that she was as well. And what I'm getting at is it seemed like he had this lust for life that was about, you know, experiencing everything he could. Like from the time he was a kid, there was, you know, I remember if this was like a thing or a biography thing or what, but about how he wanted to travel and get away from the time he was a kid and just, you know, experience everything. And, you know, it kind of all makes sense when you sort of put it together. And I think he just was like the Renaissance man and wanted to sort of, you know, he had these happy marriages, yeah, apparently, that were
devoted, devoted.
And then, you know, he liked to dabble a bit, and like I said, he played Oscar Wilde on stage, I think in the late 70s or mid 70s or something.
I think you're right. Yeah.
Which is pretty risky at the time. It's just not risky in the sense that he would never work again, but just, you know, there was such, you know, like Dirk Bogarde did a movie in, I want to say 62 or something, that was called Victim, where he was a married man who was getting blackmailed by a young man because they had a liaison. And he got, you know, he didn't get blacklisted, but it was,
yeah,
you know, I don't think the movie got released in America.
It could be a career killer really, for some folks. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
Now,
totally.
I wanted to just kind of not obscure some of his 60s stuff. Because he had an amazing career in the 1960s. We talked about The Last Man on Earth, but he did a ton of stuff for AIP, like Dr. Goldfoot and The Bikini Machine. Have you seen those movies?
They're
freaking horrible.
Yeah, I saw it once, late night thing. Yeah.
And he did a ton of stuff for Roger Corman, The Pit and the Pendulum, Comedy of Terrors, The Raven, The Mask of Red Death, The Tomb of Ligeia. All of these are movies I've seen.
Isn't there one with, is it The Raven?
The Raven's got Peter Lorre and Nicholson.
It's one of his first movies.
Yeah. My buddy always loved to do Peter Lorre and Shut Your Mouth.
I think Nicholson got paid in tabs of acid.
Yeah,
Corman just said, look, I need you to,
yeah,
can you work on this script? And then here's a tab. See you Monday. And that's how that's how he got started. But yeah, he was, I mean, think it was, you know what it was? It was like, this sounds as corny as can be, but he lent an air of class to anything he was
absolutely
in. He wasn't, every movie he was in was not, you know, wonderful,
no,
but he was wonderful in everything he did.
No, and he could slum, and, you know, like you said, he was on Batman, he was Egghead, he was on Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his appearances, like he was a guest star.
He did Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea.
Did a great Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea where it's all like ventriloquist dummies. Like, I'm not like I
that's right. They're puppets.
It's ridiculous. It's a ridiculous episode. But I mean, like most Irwin Allen shows, I don't get the reverence. But that's a tremendous episode with the puppets. That is
You know what it is? I think people are more in love with the concept,
yeah,
and the design of a lot of the Irwin Allen.
I've always said, like, there's people who always say to me, "Oh, they should make Mego figures of all the Irwin Allen shows," and it's like, yeah, maybe the ships. Like, the ships are fun, but. Like,
yeah.
Who, I can't name a Land of the Giants character, and I've seen every show.
I don't think I've ever seen an episode all the way
really?
Through. Isn't Time Tunnel another one?
Time Tunnel, yeah. I've seen
I don't,
every
I don't
Time
think
Tunnel
I have.
Too.
I remember them vaguely, especially when the one guy showed up on T.J. Hooker.
Yeah.
James Darren.
They're concepts, and they're beautiful, and they're memorable. But the shows themselves, yeah, and the characters, there's not much going on. I mean, like, I don't want to get into a, you know, like, I don't want to get a whole bunch of angry emails about it.
We'll save that for our Land of the Giants.
Yeah, the We Hate Land of the Giants episode. you know, like.
No, but I get it. I get what
yeah,
you're saying.
Yeah, like, I mean, I do. Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea is especially, like, one of the most ridiculous shows on television. And I love it. I mean, there's just werewolves and dinosaurs and, you know, different monsters attacking this sub and this sub is the size of a warehouse. Like, it just keeps going and going.
And who's the, David Hedison, right?
David Hedison
the other dude in it,
and,
the young dude?
What's the one that they always made fun of on Mystery Science Theater? Oh, God.
The redheaded guy? The redheaded guy?
The older guy. Richard Basehart.
Oh,
Richard
that guy.
Richard Basehart. Yeah.
Richard Basehart. But there was an older guy, older than Basehart, wasn't there?
Could be.
Wasn't there another guy? Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
But I mean, like, he really was peppered in 1960s TV. And then, of course, you know, in the 1970s, he had a renaissance. Again, I think monster films had a renaissance when we were in diapers with films like Dr. Fibes and Dr. Fibes Rises Again, which are two of my favorite Vincent Price films. And
I love the design of that.
I love that. Both those films are amazing to me. They're just great. And
yeah.
Theater of Blood is fantastic to me.
Well, you know who's in that? You know who the female lead
is? Diana Rigg.
My girlfriend, Diana Rigg.
Is she still your girlfriend?
Well, she's kind of, you know, she's doing her thing. I'll let her do her thing.
All right.
Yeah. She calls when she's in town.
Good.
That's all.
Good. You have an open thing going on.
Leave it there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know she's busy. It's all right. I got stuff going on, too. Yeah. I'm doing stuff, you know.
I'm still dating Betty Page.
But,
so, you know.
Right. But that's an odd movie, Theater of Blood. That is, I mean, he's off the walls.
You know what's funny? I love that movie so much because my old man loves that movie. Like, my dad's just, he's not a horror fan. He just would stay up late and watch movies. And, you know, we'd be sitting having dinner, and he's not a big genre guy, but he'd be sitting having dinner, and he'd be like, you ever seen the one where Vincent Price feeds that guy his dogs? And he'd be like, that was the only connection I had with my dad in that regard. Like, he would just stay up till 3 o'clock in the morning and watch westerns and shit. And, you know, he would just occasionally come up with something and I'd recognize it, you know, like he knew what Kolchak was or,
right.
He was just kind of like a filter. He would watch whatever was on TV.
Right.
So never a fan of anything, but you know, that's how we kind of connected was
and you were his internet.
Yeah, it was his internet. I go, that's Theater of Blood. And you go, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. That's the one. It's a weird movie. I mean, it's pretty grisly. You know, I don't think it was a Hammer film.
No, it's most definitely not a Hammer film. No, I don't even know.
Yeah,
if
it's not a Hammer film.
I don't even know if it's.
But Robert Morley's in it, and Ian Hendry is in it, who was in Get Carter.
Oh, yeah, you know what? Ian Hendry has shown up so much in my life recently. I'm beginning to think there's some weird coincidences going on. Because Ian Hendry, wasn't he the first star of the Avengers?
Yes, he was. He was in a show called, I want to say it was called Doctor at Large or something. And Patrick McNee shows up in an episode as John Seed. You know, he helps him with this case or whatever. And then it became the Avengers. And the first season is the two of them. And when they went to bring it back, I don't know if it was that Hendry
was busy
waiting for more money, or he was busy doing a movie or something, and he didn't you know get on it the next season. And of course, that was then, you know, Honor Blackman, and you know the rest is history. And but he really was like, you know, he was like groomed as this kind of matinee idol sort of guy, you know, in the early 60s. And he never quite he worked a lot, but he never quite got. But he was a raving alcoholic.
Okay.
You know, I mean, really bad. Like, there's a clip you can find on YouTube of "This Is Your Life" with Patrick McNee, and I think it's maybe, you know, I don't know, mid '80s or something. And Hendry just looks awful. He comes up, but he was gonna be the, you know, in other words, Patrick McNee got as big as what Hendry was supposed to achieve, and he never sort of got that momentum again. And so when he showed up in Get Carter, a lot of people were like, oh wow, okay, you're not even you're way down the second bill of this, this movie.
Well,
you know?
that's the thing is, when I watched Get Carter recently, I had this series of coincidences with the character where I you know, he was bothering me. He was like, that actor seemed too big for that role, and I was, you know, sitting there on my phone And then a day later, I had the latest issue of Infinity Magazine. You can buy Infinity Magazine at Barnes & Noble right now.
Yes, the magazine, the unofficial magazine of Pod Stallions.
And the first page I opened up was a picture of Ian Hendry and Patrick McNee. And I realized, oh my God, like how many times am I going to see Ian Hendry? And now you've mentioned him. It's
and he was in Theater of Blood.
Theater of Blood, I think which is a film that I recommend everyone see. I think that is Price's joie de vivre. I mean, I think that film is about a hammy actor who gets he gets kind of like the critics beat him out of his career,
yeah.
And he fakes his death. He fakes his death. And
spoilers.
Yeah, and he ends up serving up their murders.
Well, I don't know if it's based on Shakespeare, the deaths, or based on certain plays. I forget, but it has something to do with either plays or Shakespeare or something. But he did that a couple of times. He did it a couple of times where he was in. There was a Hammer film, I think. Maybe it wasn't Hammer, but he was in it with Peter Cushing, and Price in the film plays this big time. Horror movie star, you know. So he did that kind of thing a couple of times where he sort of was spoofing his image or his you know, being an actor within the film or something. And
yeah, I don't think Price ever worked for Hammer.
Okay, so it must have been, maybe it was Amicus then. He loved
England and Paris. And
who did that? Was Amicus Witchfinder General?
No, that was AIP.
That was AIP. Yeah. It's one of those. But like, and everything I've ever heard about Witchfinder General, which I believe was called The Conqueror Worm when it first hit. I don't know where that was the title in America, and Witchfinder General was the title in the UK or vice versa. But everything I've heard about that was that he was very nervous about that movie because it took things so far. I mean, I think it was an X certificate when it came out. And it's pretty brutal and it's violent.
Very sadistic. I remember even the poster was a little creepy. Like it was his face, but it was all like scenes of torture in the face, if I recall. I could be wrong.
Yeah. Like the opening scene is hard to watch even. And I don't mean hard to watch in a, you know, exorcist kind of way. Just, you know, makes you a little squeamish, but I always understood that he didn't really like that. He didn't.
Well, it's
he was very nervous about how far it took the violence and the horror.
You know, that's the same with Cushing though, and he's another guy we should probably do a show about. There's a rape scene in one of the Frankenstein films. I think it's Frankenstein Must Be Destroyed, and I really hate it. I personally really, you know, hate that that's in the film, and it really helped me once realizing that somebody, I think the actress who's being raped in the film, said that Cushing was just beside himself. He didn't want to do it. And he was apologetic about it. And it was like, yeah, he was right. It went against the, even though like, I think the Hammer Frankenstein is a total bastard. It really didn't go to the character.
Right. Yeah. And I think for Price, it was easy to like, Theater of Blood is pretty violent. I mean, it's grotesque, but it's done, you know, in a comedic way.
Yes, absolutely.
It's done as sort of a satire. So then you can sort of get away with it. But I think he was always nervous about.
Well, I think he associated his image far. With the film image. Like I think he associated. He knew that people would sit there and think, "Well, this is Vincent Price."
Right. Yeah. Right, I think you're right. But he was larger than life. I mean, he just, and everybody, again, like a Karloff thing, I think everybody, no one ever had a bad word to say about
him. No, I think he was one of those guys who nobody.
It's funny, now that I think about this is just coming to me. When I first moved to L.A., I worked on a low-budget science fiction movie in San Bernardino. And I had a place in Burbank, Toluca Lake. And things were getting really grim already in the first couple of months, because I thought I'd get work right away. And someone called me to do a job moving this video vault from Santa Monica Boulevard to Warner Hollywood. It's a long story. That then led to the company calling me a couple months later saying, hey, we need a PA. We need someone to drive around. You know, this wasn't sort of a messenger service. I was driving all around L.A. in a beat-up car delivering packages and stuff from this company. And while they were in the office they were in on Santa Monica Boulevard, just down the hallway was another company who was a Tim Burton project. He was working on a major documentary about Vincent Price. And I sat in with the editor a couple of times, and they just had stacks and stacks of footage, you know. And so this was about 95. So Price died in like 93 or something.
He died.
And it makes sense that Tim Burton was doing this because they had a relationship, and, you know, his student film and the short film, and then, you know, Edward Scissorhands and all that stuff. And I remember, you know, years later thinking about it again and thinking, oh, well, that's probably going to hit any day now. They're gonna finally put that thing out. And as far as I know, it never got released. But it was a Tim Burton executive produced thing, and he was doing this major documentary on Vincent Price, which I don't think has ever seen the light of day. But I thought it was so cool, you know, looking at some of this footage and some of the edits and stuff. And it's a long time ago, so I don't remember it a lot. But I thought, wow, this is neat. I'm seeing something before it sort of, you know, gets out there to the public. But it never did. So maybe I'm lying. Maybe I made it up.
I have no idea. I would like to think I watched it if it did come out.
Yeah, I don't think it did. I don't think it ever did.
Now, we should talk about his contributions to music too, because I think,
yes.
And this is huge for me. I'm a huge Alice Cooper fan, but he, of course, recorded for Alice Cooper's "Welcome to My Nightmare."
Yes,
and. More.
Tell us about that.
Tell us about that.
Yeah. What? Well, no, I mean, what year?
1975, which was 75. Okay. First solo album, and that was my
and
first.
How high did it chart? No, I'm kidding.
I have no friggin' idea. It was. It was the. It was the first time I'd been exposed to Alice Cooper, and to be honest with you, I think I got exposed to Alice Cooper from The Muppet Show. I mean, it was Marvel Comics. I was a very young boy, and I have a lifelong affection for Alice Cooper. But of course, I think most kids of the 80s would remember Vincent Price from Thriller.
Oh, shit, yeah.
Yeah, that might have sold one or two copies.
I don't even think, I'm going to make a confession here. Which I'm not sure anyone listening to the show is aware of. Outside of some Jackson 5 stuff and Off the Wall, I was never a Michael Jackson fan.
Me either. Yeah.
A video didn't come on and I was, you know, hateful. It wasn't like that. I was listening to the Police, you know, Synchronicity over and over again. I didn't care about Thriller. And again, also maybe also because these songs just played nonstop. But then I was that kid. I know that there are a lot of people I've talked to that this is an experience. Friday night videos.
Yeah.
I think the Thriller video had premiered on MTV, but we didn't have MTV at that time. So I was, I don't know, 13, 14. It was late night, Friday night videos. This thing premiered, and it blew my head off, that video.
Thriller?
And because I didn't... Yeah, because it was just, it was horror, and it was cool, and it was well done, and it was the guy that directed American Werewolf in London. I knew who he was at that point. But I didn't, because I didn't have the album, I didn't really know that Vincent Price was involved. So when that bit comes in, I was just, holy cow, this is amazing. You know, it really, not, I still never bought the album. I still never bought the album. I've never owned it.
Yep.
I didn't run out to get it. That redeemed Michael Jackson a little, because the album came out in 82 or 83, but Thriller because Thriller hit in 84, that video. It had been out that long, but it already had like three singles and videos and stuff. And it was just this cool, because everybody was talking about it the next Monday at school. Like, you know, did you see the thing? You know, because it, it was a
kid,
werewolf.
One kid
was,
actually confessed that Thriller gave him nightmares. And that child did
the
not
song
have
or the
a
video?
Very good Monday.
The song or the video?
The video. If the video, song did, yeah. He shouldn't have shown up for school.
You know, because there's that one shot. There's that one shot when they push in on Mike, when Michael turns around as a zombie, where he does that thing with his eyes, and it is scary. It is so, I think that's all Rick Baker, right? Didn't he do that whole video?
He did do that. Landis? Yeah.
I think he looks,
I never was scared of Thriller.
Well, you know, I'm not saying I was scared.
I always
scared.
Thought I could
I'm
push Michael
was,
down.
You can see, oh yeah, okay, I see where this show is going. I see where we're going with this. No, I'm saying that it had its moments, that video, and you could see how
it might freak
certain
amazing.
Kids out.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I was never
a
Michael Jackson guy.
Don't get me wrong, I just, you know.
So I would get excited when it would come on the radio because I knew I was going to hear Vincent Price, which was just perfect. I don't know how many takes that was, but it was just absolutely perfect.
I don't think it was many takes for him. I think he was kind of Krusty the Clown.
Well, you know what we got to talk about, as long as we're talking about his extracurricular activities, his appearance in ads, and especially the Shrunken Head kit.
Yeah,
and
should
Hangman,
talk about
the commercials
his merch.
For Hangman.
Yeah,
he did Hangman too, right?
I played Hangman like a million times and didn't know that was him on the box. Yeah,
did he do Battleship too, or just Hangman? Or was it? Am I getting the two mixed up? I know he did Hangman, but did he do a
I
Battleship?
Know he was on. He's
too?
On the box for Hangman. I don't know about Battleship, but let me find out, because that's going to bug me now.
And then the Shrunken Heads kit, which I always wanted.
The Shrunken Heads kit, yes. That one was synonymous with Vincent Price.
Yeah, in fact, remember that Simpsons where they riffed on it? I knew how off the couch.
Or was it grandson Jody?
isn't it like an egg painting kit or an egg coloring kit?
Yeah, it's Vincent Price egg magic. I don't think he's on the box for Battleship. He was on the box for
no, but what, I think he was in a commercial for Battleship. I think he's in. I think he was in a series of commercials, or maybe it was for Hangman. But
I think he was
in a toy commercial.
Like
okay.
I think like you got Don Adams and Dick Van Dyke and Lucille Ball.
Yeah. Wait,
working.
What did Dick Van Dyke do? What was
he
the
was
thing
Gabriel
he did?
Toys' spokesperson in the 1970s.
Oh yeah.
So he did
I
like Shoots Away and that stuff.
And Othello, was an Othello a Gabriel game? Didn't he do a commercial for Othello or something?
He did
Why
a
do I know
he
that?
He did one for the Lone Ranger toys, apparently. I've never seen it. I have seen Mace. I do have the original film reel for Mason Reese for the Matchbox Fighting Furies.
Of course you do. Did you get it from Mason? Because you guys hang out, don't you?
Yeah, I do. We hang out every Thursday. We go bowling. But
with Rodney Rippey or whatever?
With Rodney Allen Rippey.
Rodney Allen Rippey.
He's stuck up.
You guys have a bowling league?
But yeah, Vincent Price. Yeah, he did the egg magic thing on The Simpsons makes me laugh because it is that Shrunken Heads thing.
But with eggs, it's a perfect joke. And then he shows up at the end on the bus, like, "Hello,
Jody, you're not Price. Helping." Yeah, this is one of my favorite Simpsons episodes.
I nearly died when I saw that. The first time.
And there really is, there really is a grandson named Jody Price.
Is there?
That guy exists. And I don't know if they interviewed him in Vice or whatever, but he's like, yeah, that didn't help the Simpsons episode.
That's funny.
He really is Vincent Price's grandson.
He did magazine ads. He did. Did he do something for pickles or something once, like a pickle commercial or?
Well, you know, my wife and I were watching. This is what inspired this episode, by the way, is that my wife had never seen the Paul Lynde Halloween special, which Vincent Price isn't in, by the way. But she's a huge.
No, but it feels like he should be.
Yeah, and she's a huge fan of Halloween. So we started putting on Vintage Halloween. We had a very unsuccessful run to three or four antique malls looking for Halloween blow molds and Halloween decorations. And, you know, she's already in the spirit. So we put on a ton of commercials, and Vincent Price was in like half of them. And she at one point in the evening said, was there anything he said no to? And I just thought that was really funny. And of course he didn't.
Well, what's funny though, is that, and again, I only have a, I understand what I'm doing with the, you know, with the Chrysler commercials and stuff. I have a, I can gauge it on a certain level. Okay. But like something like that in the mid 70s, you know, when you sign up for a, I mean, that had to be ridiculous money for the time.
Yeah.
You know, don't you think like it was to me, none of those are like, it feels like he kind of did it for the, you know, like, well, I'll just go and do this. But I mean, it must have been pretty damn lucrative, right? I mean, to get a campaign like that, like in the, I mean, was there ever a Mego thing that was a celebrity sort of a person in the commercial or that did anything for?
Well, sure.
Mego?
They would hire, I mean, but you know, we didn't all grow up during the Depression, and you know,
speak for yourself.
Well, sorry, I didn't know. You were an eternal Mr. Reeves.
Thanks for rubbing it in.
I think that had a lot to do with it, where they just kept taking the work, you know, regardless of where it came from in some regards. Like, that's my only thing. Is,
but it had to be good. Had to be good money, right?
Bread. I mean, yeah, absolutely.
Jumping on stuff like that? Yeah. That's all. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to.
No, that's cool.
Didn't mean to interrupt. So you were, so she said, was there anything he
did? Yeah, she said, like, he just seemed to, I can't remember what the commercial was, but it was silly, you know, and it was probably late 70s, and it was like, eh. He didn't seem to turn down work, which I don't think is is a bad thing. And of course, him and his wife Coral Brown did a. Do you remember this sci-fi show called Time Express? I do not, and that's weird for me to say because I usually know every show that got shut down within, you know, 13 episodes, but this one is not helping. I don't remember Time Express at all.
Time Express. Yeah. No, that doesn't ring a bell at all.
Time Express.
They were working at a newspaper called Time Express.
It was an American fantasy drama series that was broadcast on CBC. This is probably the, or CBS from April 26th to May 17th. Okay. It was actually the same producers as Logan's Run, which is Ivan Goff and Ben Roberts, who also produced The Love Boat, and Vincent Price is in a hilarious episode of The Love Boat. He plays a hypnotist and is the best. Damn straight. Yeah, it's one of my favorite Love Boats. Okay, so.
See, I can't believe you've never looked this show up, or you couldn't find a bootleg of this show at this point in your life. Considering the pedigree of who's producing it, I would think you would be the first guy in line to get a copy of Time Express.
I'm filled with shame right now.
Kind of disappointed. Yeah, I'm not going to lie.
It really is a fart in the wind. Four episodes aired. Four.
And you've never seen it.
But I will. I promise to everyone listening, all 12 of you, I will seek this out and give you my opinion.
How do you expect to be the bastion?
I don't know how I'm going to get
all knowledge and the high grand poobah of any of this if you don't know what the hell Time Express is. I'm a little
bit. Have I not made custom action figures of the entire cast by now?
That just seems. You made custom action figures for Buddy Claw, or whatever it's called. What's his buddy called? Claw?
Torque.
Clawface? Torque. Sorry. I get it mixed up with some other guy with a claw. You made customs of them, and you haven't seen Time Express. Oh, well.
All 4 hours of Time Express.
All four. And they only aired a half of the fourth episode.
I'll have to track down the guy. You know, I'm sure his name is Bilbo, or his His email address is Bilbo, who has the original airings of these on tape. And I...
One of those guys at one of those shows, you know, the guys that have all the DVDs, all the table full of DVDs that are all bootlegs that you think if a studio walked in at any moment, they would get a cease and desist. They have to, somebody has to have a copy of the show. What's it about? What's the
series is an anthology similar to other dramatic. Oh, so it is a spinoff of Love Boat and Fantasy Island. Even more. To make me fall on my sword. Vincent Price and Carl Brown are host of the Time Express, a train that takes its passengers back in time to relive a crucial point in their lives. Like, you know, for you and I, it would be like when we're sending away to Starlog for some shit.
Stay, and then the kicker of the
just
log
think
line
about
is,
that one for a minute.
Will they screw it up again or do it right this
will
time?
Will they lick that envelope?
Will they make better life choices?
Or will they
or
buy
not?
An issue of Penthouse?
Tune in. You know, what year was that?
79, baby.
I'm not going to lie, because I have a bit of a photographic memory for this crap. That kind of sounds familiar to me. I don't. Maybe I'm just mixing it up with
Let me dazzle you with the guest stars. Jerry Stiller.
Oh, please, hit me.
Richard Mauser.
Okay, you got me. Okay, I'm making room for the on the DVD player right now.
Marcia Strassman, you know, Mrs. Cotter.
Oh. So they went for the
no
top.
One else that I know.
Wow.
They went crazy.
That is like that Vincent Price Halloween thing, that Horror Hall of Fame, whatever. I mean, they roll out John Carradine, who's, you know, his hands were so bad at that point. His hands were so bad at that point, you know, with the arthritis. He had that severe, severe arthritis. But, you know, with like John Carradine, John Astin, Gorshin comes out and does some impressions, and his timing is completely off. He invented this, like nobody rehearsed this, and it's just, you know, and lame jokes.
I just watched the Paul Lynn television special. I know lame jokes.
I mean, isn't there a bit in the Paul Lynn thing where he, either him or Tim Conway dress up in like
truckers.
Biker leather, but it looks. And they've got, isn't he wearing like a pink scarf or something? Or Tim Conway's doing like red, white,
truckers,
and blue? Or
they're truckers
something
competing
and,
for Pinky Tuscadero. And in between Tuscadero,
that's right.
Every clip that we could find, because the whole thing's not on YouTube anymore, because I guess it got released on DVD, and, you know, the $7 that's going to make, they had to yank it from YouTube. So we kept having to watch the ABC promos in between the little clips we could find. And, of course, they're Ernie Anderson, you know, the Love Boat guy.
Died on the ABC Sunday Night Movie.
The Paul Lynn special with, and like, the first
Roger
one,
Moore is
he
back.
Mentions the actress' name, but he calls her, you know, so-and-so / Pinky Tuscadero. And then, like, we watched another clip, and then it's, like, with Tim Conway and Pinky Tuscadero. Like, now she's just the character in the...
Exactly, because that was
the recognition
you'd have. Somebody would watch that, not because they knew who she was, because they knew the character. If that was in the TV guide,
it's actually kind of horrible.
Oh my god!
It is.
It makes it seem
like
a piece
of
meat.
Maybe she wasn't. She was okay with it because the special itself is just so bad.
I just would like to point out at this point, I'm going to make a little detour regarding the. Paul Lynn Halloween special, and please don't take this the wrong way, because I admire Kiss. I've always admired them. But as a kid, I get in an argument with my cousin, who was better, Kiss or Paul McCartney and Wings, and I think you know where I lean, basically. But I just want to say for the record, and I know we make really cool Kiss action figures and everything, so I love Kiss. I love them. I bet them they're nice. That was their TV debut, wasn't it?
It was their midnight special before. But that was their main, like, their prime time. Yeah,
main
that,
big,
that was huge. That was 30 million people.
You know what? Do you know what the Beatles? You know what the Beatles debut was?
Four or five.
Ed Sullivan Show. Do you know how many viewers? 75.
Yeah, but according to my grandfather, they were crap because it was yeah.
And they got long hair. What with the hair? Get a haircut. Yeah. So just saying, there were people in the 70s that were going, Kiss are the new Beatles. They're better than the Beatles. No way. And I always said, no, they're not. Wings could take them in a fight.
I would really like to watch Wings and Kiss fight. I would like to watch that now. Because I just watched Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park with my kids. And it's like the worst fight sequences ever recorded for film. So...
I can't. First of all, didn't they have to? Wasn't Peter Criss so off his head on glue or whatever it was that they had to get somebody else? Didn't they get someone else for a lot of the shots? But he's not
Peter Criss
like the wide shot
by Zan from the Super Friends, and Ace Frehley is a black guy for almost most of the film, and it's really obvious.
And weren't they just like? They could not deliver a line to save their lives.
The thing
like
that I
couldn't...
remember reading, because I had a minor Kiss period. Peter Criss couldn't act, so they dubbed him over. Ace Frehley, when the writers came, was a bit of a dick to them, so they thought he was like the Harpo of the band. So they wrote him all his lines are him going, ack, ack. And
they all had distinctive personalities.
Yeah, you know,
they had to find something for them to do.
By the way, I just want to say to everyone, Vincent Price has nothing to do with Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park, but he did work for Hanna-Barbera on the 13 Ghosts of Scooby-Doo as Vincent Van Gool.
Yes, yes. And that design, the artwork of him is awesome.
I had dropped the hell out of Scooby-Doo.
It's one of the best
point because of Scrappy freaking Doo. I do not like that. And when Velma
I agree.
And Freddy,
I couldn't agree with you more. I think we're all in agreement.
Done. And I was also 14 years old, so it didn't really matter. But
I was also 27, and I had moved on from Scooby-Doo.
This really wasn't a source of outrage.
But yeah, it. I think everyone is in agreement. I don't find any people through life that stick up for Scrappy.
I have met
people hated it.
I got it through Plaid Stallions. I got this like you sons of bitches, and it was like you're the guy. And I just I tried to
capture you're the guy
in a jar, but it didn't work.
He's the guy that watched the Fonzie cartoon.
Oh yeah,
just for Mr. Cool.
Oh yeah, Mr.
the dog. Yeah,
Mr. Cool and Godzilla
cartoon dog in history
mashed into one with Batmite and whatever the Orko, and it's still not as bad as Scrappy Doo.
Oh, you know what? Have you seen? You've seen the? I don't know if you have, but the second season of Filmation Flash Gordon,
they got
the first
little
season
dragon.
One of the greatest cartoons. They thought we got to boost the ratings. No more. Serializing of it, like this week is Madness on Mongo. No, you can't do it. We got to make them individual stories. And let's bring in a little sidekick like Scrappy Doo, and in came that pink dragon, and that's pretty dire, especially when you think about the tone of the show in
perfect.
The first season, and how drastically different it is in the second season.
When I look at Filmation
little pink
shows,
dragon, so
my
I'd
favorite
him in
show
too.
Is Tarzan, and then everything else. Nothing has that. Filmation imp in it. Jason of Star Command doesn't have that. The Freedom Force don't have that. Like, I like all that.
Star Trek.
You're absolutely
right. They didn't have any goofy sidekicks.
And I'll bet you anything, Shimer tried to put that in, and whoever said, no, don't do that. Because they liked that.
Hey, speaking of, I know we're really digressing here, but I can't. Is the Godzilla? First off, is the Godzilla cartoon available on DVD? Is that series available anywhere, like a licensed, decent copy of it? And secondly, were there ever any specific toys made for that show? Well, I think there was a comic book, but were there any
comic book wasn't
specific toys made
based
for it?
On the only toys I know of are two things. Imperial did a bunch of Puffy stickers. And the reason I know that is when I went to buy my first pack of cigarettes, there was a set of Imperial Godzilla Puffy stickers with Godzuki. And I was like,
wow,
they won the shelves for a while. And some cigarettes, thank you. And you know,
oh, and a bottle
variety
of gin.
Stores don't do that in Canada. And I think Knickerbocker did a plush series of Godzilla and Godzuki, and I actually have the Godzilla from my childhood, and my beautiful daughter
sewed
up Godzilla.
That's all they did.
That's it. Yeah. We are 10,000 leagues away from Vincent Price at this point.
I know. I'm sorry. I apologize. Let's just pretend that the Godzilla series was Vincent Price's idea. You know it would be fun.
Well, let's just spread misinformation. That's what the internet does now.
Why not?
Price of
So he was the 13 ghost of blah blah. You know, I Scooby-Doo. Think. Yeah. Oh, that's another one. I'm sorry. There's another one. House
stars,
on Haunted
yeah.
Hill.
It absolutely
wasn't that
was,
Vincent Price?
Yeah.
That is a great horror movie. Most of Price's stuff is really good. I mean, even the stuff that's low budget and campy or whatever, he's always wonderful.
Too. And I don't know if you ever listened to Gilbert Gottfried's podcast, but Gilbert Gottfried especially loves to do the whole, like, the tingler is loose in the theater, you know, that whole shtick all of...
Yeah, didn't he put shocks in the seats? Like, you're supposed to get an electric jolt or something
so.
In the seats,
yeah.
And there were, like, skeletons
that
came down
that
from
would
the
be
ceiling
House
and,
on Haunted Hill, yeah.
Yeah, so the tingler,
and
yeah.
Wouldn't you have loved to have done that? Like, for me, I would pay $50 to go to that and do that.
Somebody, actually, that's a really good idea. Somebody could make a bundle if every year they did, like say in L.A. or whatever, they got a theater and ran, you know, a week's worth of the William Castle stuff as you would have experienced it back in the day. That would be such fun. That
I
would
never
be such
got
a great
more
idea.
Upset at my parents than you know? When our local station ran John Waters film in Smellorama. So,
you got a little scratch
and it
snip
was so
card.
Weird because like we're buttoned down Toronto, you know, and like they were selling these at like Max Milk, and my parents wanted to go away for that weekend, and I was like, how the hell? Damn it, like it's 1983 or, you know, I didn't have a VCR. And I can just remember thinking like,
right,
this is a once in a lifetime thing. I'm never going to get to do this again. Of course, I never did. But, and
my
like,
life
why
will
the hell,
never be the
why
same.
The hell is all of Toronto interested in doing a John Waters thing? Like that was the more weird thing. I'm 12 going like,
well, they only printed up 10 cards per store probably.
Yeah.
That's
but they
why.
Were selling them at variety stores. It was just such a, you know, it was just such a thing. I did see the Mad Magician, like the Global was doing this all summer. And I did see the Mad Magician in 3D, which was a Vincent Price film, getting right back into that. Was great, but I was always pissed about that John Waters phone. I can't even remember the name of the John, the one they were doing.
That
will drive
me
crazy.
That reminds me too of a local station once. It had to be around 83 when the 3D thing was really kicking off again.
Oh yeah, like
they
Coming
ran,
at You and Space Hunter.
They ran promos. I mean, round the clock. You could not escape these promos. Tune in on May 12th. We will show Gorilla at Large.
I saw Gorilla at Large.
Okay. And they ran these trailers on TV. And it's like, go and be sure you go to your local Super America store and you'll get a pair of 3D glasses. You know, I mean, I ran out so fast to get the glasses and none of the stores had them when I kept looking. And I started to feel weird when I'd ask and they didn't know what I was talking about. And then finally they'd show up and I got a couple of pairs just in case one of them broke. So I was ready to watch Gorilla at Large on TV in 3D. And it didn't work, of course. Nothing was, I mean, it was the biggest ripoff. They, I mean, everybody was talking about this movie. Like, all my friends were kind of, are you going to watch the, oh, yeah, they're going to show in 3D. You've got to get the, like, it was kind of a thing that everyone's kind of buzzing about. And it was a giant ripoff. You couldn't, it didn't do a thing. You couldn't, it just, when you took them off, it was just fuzzy.
What so I remember my, the best about it was it didn't work too badly for my end. But a lot of the movies, I think, like they showed Gorilla at Large, they showed Revenge of the Creature, they showed The Mad Magician, I remember doing that all, you know, I doted on that. I loved it. But some of the movies really sucked. Like, there was a movie called Inferno or something like that, and it was just a boring movie that really didn't have a lot to do with, like, the 3D was thrown in at the end or something like that. You started to realize that the whole 3D thing was maybe a fad for a reason. Like, the movies sucked.
And that was, I think that's right about the time that Dr. Tong would do 3D House of Pancakes or House of Beasts or whatever.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It was a complete riff on the 3D craze and how stupid it was. Now, just you just push stuff toward the camera, and that was all they kind of did.
Well, I can remember the CNE had a new polarized. This is back in the early 80s. They had a new polarized 3D exhibit, and it was the biggest thing that was going to be there that summer. And it was, you know, it wasn't the red and blue, it was the polarized glasses. And we all got sent in a room, and it was a dark room, and they put a screen on, and it was just a guy smashing crap and throwing the pole. Like, it was completely Dr. Tong. I remember that so well. Like, oh my God, and then they just shush you out the room, right? Like, you know, the next.
And Midnight Cowboy one was one of the greatest things ever on television. But that wasn't 3D, was it? That wasn't a 3D thing. They just did a remake.
They just remade Midnight Cowboy.
John Candy in the cowboy boot.
Marianne Mobley walking through here, do I?
John Candy in the cowboy boot, and then Eugene Levy walking down the street.
And it's,
you know,
it's,
and then he does the "I'm walking here" is the one of the funniest things I've ever seen on television in my life.
And I think they're trying to use, like, downtown Edmonton as New York City, which I lived in Edmonton in the 90s, and it's like, there's no friggin' way this is Manhattan.
It's so brilliant. Yeah. So why don't we? Well, here's this. Now that, because we're all the stuff that we love and talk about and stuff, we did talk about the board game. The Hangman game that he was on the packaging of. Correct me if I'm wrong. There is a 12-inch figure of Dr. Fibes, I believe, that was made by somebody. I forget who. And I think there's a Price head, and then there's the skull head.
Yeah, and I think there's actually a Vincent Price action figure out there, too.
There's a figure that Mezco did. I think it's Mezco, but it's all exaggerated, kind of like claymation sort of thing.
Well, it could be. I know, kind of exaggerated,
but I can't. Is there one that exists that's just Vincent Price as he is? Was there like a one for the Raven or something that I missed? Or
I want to think of Mock Time Toys made a Vincent Price figure.
They did. Yeah. For the Raven, I think, with the blue coat and the fur collar.
Yeah. I honestly think they did. Like, well, first of all, Figures Toy Company, the Mego guys, they made a beautiful egghead doll based on, you know, Vincent Price's egghead.
Oh, right, for Batman.
And NECA made a 12-inch based on, I don't remember NECA doing this, but they made a 12-inch based on the Raven. Wow.
Okay, so that's it, the Raven. Yeah, NECA, it is the Raven.
Wow, that was a million years ago.
Wait, sorry, NECA did, you mean a 12-inch figure?
Yeah, 1/6.
Is that the one I'm thinking of? Is he in the blue coat with the white fur collar? Yeah, okay, so that's the one I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
So that was NECA.
That's
got to
be a million years ago, because NECA hasn't done stuff like that in a while.
Amok Time did the Fibes one? Is that Amok Time?
Yeah, who did the Fibes? And then, of course, my buddy Martin did a couple of, you know, bootleggy figures for Distinctive Dummies. You know, he does these little tiny runs. And he and I collaborated on a Vincent Price from Frightenstein that I did for the local Hamilton toy show, where we did half a dozen Frightenstein Vincent Price figures. Which I'm very, very fond of. And, you know, of course, Majestic Studios, by the way, did the Vince Price Dr. Fives. But, Martin's...
I wouldn't mind picking that up. That would be a cool... That would be a cool one.
Such a Mego scale guy. Martin, of course, did the Frightenstein for me, and it was more or less just done for me and my friends. But
did he do a Theater of Blood set with him and Diana Rigg, like 8-inch set?
He's done a bunch of stuff.
Because that's the funniest thing about the movie is the disguises that they wear. Yeah, and there's one point that Price has a giant afro.
Yeah, hi,
and he's
I'm
in
Butch.
Sort of 70s gear.
Yeah.
Yes.
Martin has produced a 12-inch and an 8-inch Butch. I know that.
He has?
Yeah. They came and went. Like, he can does you, these oh, tiny you, little runs.
Oh, man. Oh, can you reach out done. To him and see if they're done? Oh, man. I'd love to get that.
And they're amazing. Like,
and she's got a big mustache and big sunglasses and a wig. It's clearly
the one role that Vincent Price just nailed was Butch.
Oh my god, I'm so disappointed that exists and I don't have it.
Oh, it's so awesome too. Oh, I don't own it either. I remember that's how I got to know him was when I saw that Butch doll and I was like, I gotta talk to this guy.
He made Butch. I wonder if I can find it on eBay or something.
You know what? You probably could. I'll keep an eye out because, you know, there probably isn't, like, you know, he didn't make a lot of them, and there's probably only 50 guys who would ever want that figure. But,
well, that's the one I'm thinking of, right? Where he's got a big fro.
Yeah, he does I think he kills.
He's like
Carl
a hairdresser
Brown, who he ended up marrying. With the,
oh, I think but, you're right.
Yeah,
I think you're
yeah.
right. Oh my god, I gotta find this.
Oh yeah.
And then of course he did. Like we said, the Muppet Show. I used to see him on. He'd be on Carson all the time.
Yeah, and he did. Of course, he did the Monster Club, which we've talked about in the Amicus film, where he teams up with John Carradine.
John Carradine, and then is Cushing in that too in the Monster Club?
No, I don't think Cushing is in the Monster Club.
Is that
Stuart
the one?
Whitman is.
Is that the one that that I always get mixed up? But it's I think it has UB40 in it or something.
It does have UB40 in it.
It's like one of the first
it's
things
not a very
they
good
ever did.
Film. Yeah, it's not a really great film. It has Carradine in it, has Stuart Whitman in it. I do not believe. I think that's the one that Cushing and Lee both passed on. They went this.
Okay,
this
I'm
sucks.
Looking at eBay right now. There is a Tingler.
Yep.
There is a Tingler, and there is a Pit and the Pendulum one. But
yep.
I don't think Bush.
I think they went to town. I know Butch was made at least as a 12-inch.
That's brilliant.
Butch was, yeah.
That's so brilliant. Wow. But you know what else he did? And I think he did a lot, was Hollywood Squares. I think he did like a ton of episodes of Hollywood Squares, which was a hugely popular show. I don't know if it's still on, like the revamp thing is still on, but yeah, that was a big, big show, you know.
Oh, it was huge, yeah. Paul Lynde, Peter Marshall years.
Yeah, and Paul Lynde was the center square for a decade, it felt like. He was on that and was having a ball. Price was on that, and
I was actually watching something the other day. It was Bruce Vilanch being interviewed about the Paul Lynde Halloween special, and it was saying that, you know, Vilanch used a beautiful term to describe him, and I use that to describe somebody like Jack Black to this day, where you need a pinch of him, not a pound.
Yeah.
You know, he was amazing in this little part, but if you put him on a sitcom by himself, it just drove people right away. And I love that. I loved that, you know, like, I'm not the world's biggest Bruce Vilanch fan, but he nailed that. He knew what he was talking about.
Well, he also, it was that amazing time where, you know, the sexual, like someone's, you know, their leanings, whatever you want to call it, where they swing. I'm just saying that everybody kind of knew that Paul Lynde, you know, didn't have a wife and kids at home or
was
whatever.
What?
But you know, he's happy. He's very happy.
He didn't find Miss Wright, Jason.
He was happy. He was like Liberace. He had more fun with his dog.
What did he try to say?
He didn't really need to be tied down. It was more being tied down, I think, that was really the issue. But there was just this sort of, you know, I mean, women were nuts for Paul Lynde. He got
buckets
of fan mail. You know, they just adored him. And it was just that amazing time where it was like, it just was what it was, and nobody really thought about it.
I watched the Paul Lynde Halloween special with my wife, and she kept saying, like, all I see is Roger from Family Guy, or American Dad. And I said to my wife, yeah, but if you and Seth MacFarlane's like, you know, if Paul Lynde was still alive, he would have voiced Roger from American Dad. Like that.
Right.
There's no getting around that. That is what he is supposed to be.
You know, that character makes me think. Now we're talking about Paul Lynde. That makes me think of things like the Donnie Marie Show, which Paul Lynde was basically on every single week. He was sort of like their uncle.
Yeah.
Because I thought, well, I bet Vincent Price showed up on Donnie and Marie at some point. He must have. Like, that must have just been...
I know Paul Williams did, because he sung the hell of it from Phantom of Paradise, which is one of my favorite movies. But
On Donnie and Marie he did?
Yep. Oh, he sung it on several specials.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's always just, you know, they took the Phantom of the Paradise soundtrack and then just put it, like, the record on, and he lip-synced to it, but...
Vincent Price, Paul Lynde, Paul Williams, Rich Little, there were these people that just, in the 70s, they were on every show you can think of at some point, and that, I mean, no wonder he was like we said, a lot of this stuff wasn't airing, you know, every week. There wasn't a Vincent Price movie that, you know, even if it was on, you didn't really know. Sometimes the TV listings would be wrong or whatever. So I probably saw more of him as a kid, you know, well into the early 80s, more of Vincent Price on TV stuff than I had of his movies at that point.
Well, he was on the Brady Bunch Variety Hour. He was he was on a Donnie Marie episode. He played Dr. Frankenstein. Oh, God. Oof.
He also has the most amazing hair. It was amazing when he was young. It got better, you know, in the mid-60s and later, and then it just became this incredible force of nature, this hair, the way it would sort of...
You know
of,
what I want to point
Nobody looks
too.
Like that. Nobody has hair like that.
You know? Played a... I watched a few years ago... Now, he's on Columbo, but he was... Somebody, a friend of mine, pointed out that he was on a Snoop Sisters. And I watched
I got to stop you there. You stumped me. I don't know what Snoop Sisters is.
I know a Snoop Sisters is I think Alice Cooper plays a witch on an episode. And, you know...
Who are they? Who are the Snoop Sisters? What is this show?
The Snoop Sisters are Helen Hayes and Mildred Natwick, and they're like... I think it was one of those, like, you know, Banachek and Columbo and Macmillan and Wife things, like the NBC Friday night movie.
Oh, the mystery movie. I think in Rockford Files, that was the very first Rockford Files too, I think.
Yeah.
Was one of those specials one night, the 2 hour the pilot.
And the Snoop Sisters only lasted like 5 episodes of this. Like, it did not make the cut. It is a time express of this series. And it's just two old ladies who were mystery writers, and shit happened. I've only watched one or two episodes because they're on YouTube.
Clearly, the influence for Murder, She Wrote.
I think the only reason I watched one of them was because Alice Cooper was on it, and I'm an Alice Cooper fan. And then the second one had Vincent Price playing basically Vincent Price, like a washed-up horror actor. So I watched that one, too. And
Snoop Sisters.
I have nothing to report other than that.
Can I just say how much I love the fact that people like Paul Lynde and Alice Cooper would show up on things like the Muppets and Mighty Specials at the time.
Oh, God. Bless them.
Where they were gacked out of their skulls on whatever they were.
Oh, sure.
There's something so... I've told you stories about the recording studio I go to and a couple guys that have been there for a long, long time. And just how Wild West you know, I mean, what he, one guy told me that Robert Goulet and his wife hit on him. This is like mid-70s and wanted to take them back to their house. They basically were very clear about what kind of time they wanted to spend with him back at their house. And, you know, and some of the stuff that just went on in the studio.
And he said no?
Yeah, he passed it up. I said, man, I said, you know what? If I had been there, I would have gone with you. Just to go to the house and have the weird experience.
In your life.
But he does, and it's just this weird time of, you know, debauchery and drugs and everything, where it was like the Wild West. And so it's hilarious to me that, and you know, they've talked about these things. It's not a secret. Alice Cooper and Paul Williams, you've seen the Paul Williams documentary where they show clips of him being on certain shows, and he doesn't want to watch it. He can't watch it. Where it's like, I can tell how messed up I am right there. You know, he hosted the Mike Douglas show for a week or something, and he was drunk, you know, for the entire week or something. There's something just kind of fantastic. I'm not saying to do drugs. I'm not saying to get drunk or anything. I'm just saying there's kind of something lovely about the fact that they'd be on these kid shows, and God knows what they were doing in the green room. That's all. I'm not endorsing anything. Say no to drugs, okay?
We know what they were doing in the green room.
Just say no to drugs, everybody, okay? That's all I'm going to say, all right? This is your brain on drugs. This is your brain on pod stallions. Right.
One of the things I want to just say is I had no idea that I'd forgotten about this. Do you remember the terrible... I shouldn't say terrible, because there's no fan. Find me. The 80s film Dead Heat with
Joe Piscopo
and Treat Williams.
Treat Williams, and one of them's dead. Doesn't one of them get killed? And then they both get killed. They both get killed. Oh, I guess I don't need to see that now.
I'm sorry.
Was Vincent Price in that?
He is.
He's in that movie?
Yeah.
Wow. He's in a movie... Oh, now that I'm thinking of it, he's in a movie directed by Dennis Hopper. Jodie Foster is in it.
Oh my God, I've seen that one.
It's like an early 90s. Tracks, I think was a different Dennis Hopper movie. This one was, I want to say 90 or so. It was one of the last things Vincent Price did. He's in one scene as like a mob boss in the back of a limo.
This is the movie I'm thinking of. I remember this.
Remember this?
And she's an artist or something. And
somebody gets killed and she's a witness, or he's a hitman. He's trying to protect her or something. But loads of people are in it, too. So it's Hopper, Jodie Foster, Vincent Price. Who else is in that?
John Turturro, Fred Ward, who I'm a huge fan of.
Fred Ward.
I watched that at Schiller Theater one year.
Is Pesci in it? I just remember it being a great cast.
Dean Stockwell's in it.
Dean Stockwell. Okay. Yeah, of course, because he and Hopper were like best friends. That makes total sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not a bad movie. I remember renting it once, and it's not bad. You know, but it's right in that thing where, like, she had just... I mean, she'd always been a presence, but then she exploded with Silence of the Lambs. You know, right to the... I mean, you know, the accused was prominent as well, but Silence of the Lambs was just like global. So it was one of these things that she did, I think, that was probably on the shelf, and then Silence of the Lambs happened, and it was like, well, let's get this thing out, because you know, and it's a strange movie, but I remember it not being terrible, and Vincent Price has like one scene in it, and he's in the back of a limo, if I recall.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And then he did Edward Scissorhands in 90. That was 1990, and then he died in 93, so he probably did a few odds and ends in between there, and then that was a good life. It was a really amazing life, everything he did, the cookbooks and the art, because he lectured as well. I think he went around the country and lectured about art and stuff, I think.
Sounds right. Yeah, I think at one time, and I don't have any examples of this, but he sold art through Sears.
Yes, it was
like
when
the Vincent Price collection,
Sears Roebuck, and you used it. You paid for it with your card, your Sears Roebuck card. But I don't know if it was real art or was it like lithographs. But he did a whole presentation for it, and I think he did commercials or something. And
it most definitely wasn't real art. It was definitely, like, purchased lithographs.
Yeah, lithographs, yeah. But, you know, yes, yeah, he did. I remember that from some special a million years ago about Vincent Price. I remember that.
And me too,
He made a video, or they made a film of him explaining, you know, what this thing is, this art thing that he's doing. So he was something. He was big in music, obviously. You know, I don't know what he got for Thriller. It was just a session fee, but I hope he got Peace. That was a big record.
He got paid well.
That's a big record.
I can only imagine that he was compensated.
He was big in TV. Didn't he do a Dracula? Am I crazy? Or did he do like a TV special about Dracula or something in the 80s?
I don't remember that, but I do remember that, like, he narrated a French-Canadian TV show about the devil that I was a kid. I actually tracked this down. It took me forever to track it down, but I've only been able to find the French version of it on YouTube. But it was, like, Tales of the Devil, you know, like the whole fiddle story and that sort of thing. And these were French-Canadian legends about the devil that... they had animated, and Vincent Price did the narration for that. I mean, he really wasn't a unapproachable sort.
Right, right. It seemed like he didn't turn anything down, but he kind of didn't. He kind of, you know, it just was, I mean, that, like I say, that...
I'm sure, I can only imagine he did turn some stuff down, and that stuff was horrible.
Probably because he was double-booked. No, but the one.
Well, no, I would love to see what he said no to.
Yeah,
I would love to see.
Yeah,
you know.
No, he just was. Were you ever on that show that you like so much, called Fantastic
Hilarious House of Frightened
Journey? Fantastic Boy.
He was not on Fantastic Journey.
I told you this before that I remember that show. I remember it being on. I didn't. You know, I have vague memories of it, but I remember watching it because it's something I would have. You know, I would have been turned on by. I would have watched. You know, he did it all. He was big in TV. He was big in movies. He could do drama. I mean, I think he kind of stopped with the drama for the most part at a certain point when he got so big in horror.
Yes, absolutely. Although I don't think he would have turned anything down.
What kind of VO work besides the cartoon? What else did he do in cartoons?
Oh boy.
I mean, anything up.
One of his last credits was Tiny Toon Adventures, and that's about it.
They gave a TV show to Tiny Tim, Tiptoe Through the Tulips guy. He got his own cartoon.
No, Tiny Toon Adventures.
Oh, Tiny Toon. Sorry, my bad.
Yeah.
Although I would have watched that. I would have watched the Tiny Tim cartoon.
I'm sure he would. He did a Trapper John M.D. He, of course, narrated the Tim Burton short Vincent, which was about
which
him.
I saw at my, I think, my very first Spike and Mike's Animation Festival. I think it was 88 or 89.
I remember those.
And they brought it as like
a... It was in Bust...
As a surprise, they showed the Vincent short at the festival. What was the one you said?
Bustin' Loose, but his scenes were deleted.
I was just going to say, I know Bustin' Loose, and he wasn't in that.
His scenes were deleted. He's in The Bionic Woman. He was, my goodness, he got around.
These are Carol big Burnett shows. Show. Like Bionic Woman, Carol Burnett and Bionic Woman were huge shows. So getting him is like, he'd instantly be home for that. Cancel all your plans, basically.
Night Gallery, of course.
Night Gallery, that's right. I forgot about the Night Gallery one.
Mod Squad. He was in a Mod Squad, for crap's sake.
He probably played a dealer.
And he was on the Red Skelton Hour. Oh my God. A whole bunch of times. Wow. He really got around.
He must have done just fine. Let's put it that way. He did just fine. I got to get one of these distinctive dummies. I got to track down that Theater of
Butch
Blood. Butch Doll. I got to have that before I die.
See that you do.
So yeah, so there you go. That's Vincent Price.
I think that's Vincent Price in a nutshell. Yeah, absolutely.
I hope you've all learned something, and do yourself a favor this Halloween season. Get yourself some Vincent Price movies for one of your horror festivals.
I think you, you'll be able to find all of them on AMC or some good ones on AMC or TCM this season, and I think they're definitely worth it.
Yeah. House of Wax. I'd kick it off with House of Wax because that would remind me of that experience. And it's disturbing. And you know who else is in House of Wax? Who's in little Charles Bronson.
Yeah.
Now that's a guy he could take anybody in a fight. Charles Bronson.
Yeah, I think he never let go of that. Although, as he got older, it didn't really work. But yeah.
You know, he was still pretty badass. I mean, I wouldn't take a swing at him, but
I don't know. They were filming the last of those movies.
The Death Wish one? The Death Wish one?
And
yeah. Like
they
Death
were
Wish
starting
7.
To get a little like, yeah, okay.
But I think it's the third or the fourth one is just incredible. It's just so insane. Like these, you know, punk rock type dudes in the neighborhood.
Oh, the third one. Death Wish 3. First time I ever watched Death Wish 3, my wife was going to bed and I said, I'm not joining you. This is going to be horrible. And it really is, like, not to get off on a tangent, but it is, like, written by your racist grandpa. This is how he thinks the world is.
That's exactly.
And it is beautiful.
The way the gang are dressed and kind of how they act is, like, whoever wrote this, you know, had seen The Road Warrior and had just discovered who, you know, Sid Vicious was, like, the week before.
And by the way, that is Chuck from Happy Days, the leader of the villain.
That's right. That's right.
There's just a part where there's a guy called the Giggler or something like that. And
what does he do? What's his thing?
He giggles. And he steals this woman's purse. Like, you know, he runs up, ha 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 ha, steals this woman's purse. Bronson just murders him in the street, and everyone applauds.
It's amazing. By the way, that's a classic Giggler move. Stealing a purse, giggling about
the
it.
Giggler, man. Like that's it's the, just.
Who's gonna make us laugh, man? Not the Giggler.
Please, if you're at the grocery store and you see that in the bin by the checkouts, own that movie.
You will not be disappointed. I mean, you will be disappointed, but you won't be disappointed because it's so atrocious. It is so bad.
God,
but again,
it's
one of those
wonderful
things that's like, from the moment, it was dated before the pen hit the paper to write the thing. It was dated. It was already well past its sell-by date, everything in it. And I think it was like 84, 85 or something, when you certainly should have known better. Certainly should have known better at that point to make
such a thing. I remember that I opened the film, you know, and Ed Lauder, who was a great character actor. It was 85. Yeah, good God, it was 85.
85. Oh, my God, why do I know that? That's ridiculous.
Yeah, Michael Wisher directed. But
Michael
there's
Wisher,
a scene where, like, Ed Lauder's throwing, you know, Charles Bronson's character in jail for nothing, by the way. Like, he didn't do anything. And I said to my wife, I have to stay up until they're back-to-back on the street just murdering people. Because I know that's what's going to happen.
You were right.
Oh, my God, I was right.
Can I tell you how much I love Ed Lauder, by the way? And also that, this is a true story, I came to a stoplight once. This is about 4 or 5 years ago. And I turned to my right, and Ed Lauder was driving the car next to me.
Oh.
And I looked, and he just kind of turned. I swear this is true. He just kind of turned to see me, and I kind of went, oh, my God. And then I, like, put the passenger window, and I kind of went, oh, man, you're fantastic. I love your stuff. You know, like, and he kind of did this sort of not quite the gun with the thumb and the finger kind of thing, but he just kind of, you know, did that past his chin at me, like, you got it, buddy. Like, yeah, you're, you know, yeah, he kind of did the gun thing. Like, yeah, and he winked at me and then drove off, and it just made my day that I just got to say hi to Ed Lauder. His windows up, and I put my. Did he die?
He died 5 years ago. Yeah.
Well, there you go. He probably thought, you know, it's not going to get any better after I met that guy at stoplight.
He died happy.
He died happy.
That you.
You know what?
Knew who he was.
You know what? You laugh, but I bet it happens more than you think. That I meet people
and they
die not long after because life just starts to go downhill after that. Pretty much
happened to me and Jim Kelly.
See?
Yeah.
We've had it. We just got that thing, man. I don't know what it is, but
the kiss of death.
Kiss of death. Well, speaking of, that's the end of the show. I hope you enjoyed it.
That's it for us, guys.
I think we talked about Vincent Price at some point in the show. I don't remember how
a little bit in. It's a 2-hour episode. You'll find him.
I'm sure you learned some stuff. And thank you, Brian. And we are going to do another one for October. We always do two. Yep. So, as always, we're happy to get...
Start the month with one, and we'll end the month with one. So.
Happy to get suggestions. If there's anything you'd like to hear us talk about or cover, please let us know.
Even if you want us to do Vincent Price again, we're good.
We'll do it. And then all we ask is to send us some candy. That's all.
Yeah.
Just a bag that we can split. And cash. Preferably cash. But some candy.
Mostly cash, though.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Spooky times, folks.
Ooh.